Are Germans ready to become Europe's largest military force? It's Berlin briefing time. Thanks for clicking us to get you fully briefed on how ready Germany is to become Europe's largest military power. And I put in again in brackets because the whole idea of Germany becoming a big conventional military force again raises memories of that dark Nazi era. Fast forward 80 years and all eyes are on a very different modern day Germany to spend and help Ukraine defend against the aggressor Russia, and to compensate for Trump America, whose interest in Europe is waning. But can Germany get it done? And is German society ready for this? Let's talk defense spending, arms buildup, reintroduction of conscription, and why some in the defense minister's own party insist that Putin should still be a political partner. Yes, indeed. We'll do that with our very own NATO correspondent in Brussels, Alexandra van Namen, who's coming straight out of a NATO briefing, and our chief political correspondent, Nina Haase, who covers German defense and often travels with the defense minister, Boris Pistorius.
It's not today when he's in Kyiv.
Not today. But lucky for us, you're here. But I want to start off...
And our studio Kyiv is covering that trip.
Totally. And I just want to start off with what Friedrich Merz said in his first big speech before Parliament on how he wants to expand Germany's military again. Let's just take a listen to that.
The government will in future provide all the necessary funding that the Bundeswehr needs to become Europe's strongest conventional army. A more than appropriate aim for Europe's most populous and economically strongest country. It's what our partners and friends expect. More than that, it's what they demand.
Nina, how's this different from Olaf Scholz, the previous chancellor, who went to parliament just days after that attack on Ukraine by Russia? And he basically stated that through a 100 billion defense package on Ukraine, Germany would become the largest conventional force.
That was a remarkable speech, and we've talked about it many times now. And we've also covered this topic in previous podcast episodes. But of course, things are happening so fast in this country, and you really almost can't keep up with how the debate is changing, how we're discussing details. Now we're talking about a NATO goal of 5% defense spending, and we'll get to that with Alexandra. That would mean almost half of Germany's annual budget, right? So where did we start off? This was Russia's full-scale invasion in February 22, and Olaf Scholz for 3 days didn't say much, if anything, and people were holding their breath. And then he came out and delivered that Zeit und Wende speech and really remarked on it as being a turning point in history. And that then triggered lots and lots and lots of consequences. And Olaf Scholz said that the 100 billion euros were essentially going to help spike spending in the military, that it would boost an area that had been underfunded for so many decades since the fall of the Berlin Wall, since the collapse of the Soviet Union. Germans were living in their happy land. History was over, as some experts suggested at the time, so Germany didn't invest in its military anymore. And here comes Olaf Scholz, the German chancellor, and says, no, Russia's full-scale invasion into Ukraine also means that our way of life is at risk. We just don't know where Russia is going to go, and we need to be ready again. So 100 billion euros is what we were talking about 3 years ago. And I've just said that 5% goal of NATO would mean essentially an annual 200, right, per year. It's a massive spike in our defense spending. So the goal was the same. Friedrich Merz is also, and that is, I think, the other big difference. Friedrich Merz from the Conservatives is a better communicator than Olaf Scholz. So Olaf Scholz had the goal of getting the military up to speed again, of having German society essentially accept the fact that this is a new reality and we cannot continue on this path of underspending. But Friedrich Merz is much clearer and says he wants Germany to have Europe's strongest conventional army. Now, what that means, I'm sure we can discuss all of that as well. Of course, everybody has their own definition.
Yeah, and the conventional, of course, is key because Germany cannot own nuclear weapons. There's France, and Britain is no longer in the European Union, but it's a NATO partner, and it is teaming up once again to have this defense drive of Europe becoming less dependent on the United States. And this is where I want to throw to you, Alexandra. You've just come from a briefing. There's a key NATO summit coming up. The 5% spending will play a huge role. But German Chancellor Friedrich Merz will also arrive with a big checkbook, because now the sky is the limit when it comes to defense spending. In theory, he can ask his parliament to grant him a budget limitless. There's no longer a debt brake for defense spending. So what are those expectations? What does everybody expect Friedrich Merz to bring to that NATO table?
Well, you're right. I've just come back from NATO headquarters. Unfortunately, I cannot reveal who briefed us there because it was off the record. But I threw the question in what NATO allies expect from Friedrich Merz and how big of a deal is this announcement that he and his government are working on building the biggest, strongest army in Europe. And what I heard today is in line with officials and diplomats have been saying since this announcement was made, that this is really great news for NATO, that Germany is a big driver when it comes to shaping Europe's defenses. But they also point to the fact that it is going to take a while, because the German armed forces have been underfunded for such a long time. So almost all of them saying, well, great news, but also some skepticism is there as well. And we have to say that, of course, for NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte, what is happening in Germany and this kind of determination to invest more on defense, it's really great news. I remember I was in Antalya in Turkey a few weeks ago when NATO foreign defense ministers met, and it was quite a surprise when the German foreign minister, Mr. Wadefuhl, told us that, yes, Germany is fully supporting the 5%, the new defense spending goal of 5% of GDP. Because we did not expect him to come out and to say it out loud. But it was a big boost for Mark Rutte and his plan to convince all the allies to spend more on defense. The 5% that he wants them to spend, but of course the 5% that the US administration and Donald Trump first and foremost is demanding from the Europeans.
And Friedrich Merz made sure that he let his foreign minister commit to these 5% way ahead of his first visit to the Oval Office, which was widely seen as a big success. He didn't get thrown out. That's how low the bar was. But let's just take a listen. There was really an almost involuntarily funny moment between Friedrich Merz and Donald Trump on that very defense spending. Let's take a listen.
I know that you're spending more money on defense now, and quite a bit more money. That's a positive thing. I'm not sure that General MacArthur would have said it's positive. You know, he wouldn't like it, but I sort of think it's good. You understand what I mean by
Absolutely.
That?
I understand.
He made a statement, never let Germany rearm. And I said, I always think about that when he says, sir, we're spending more money on defense. I say, ooh, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I think it's a good thing. But, you know, at least to a certain point. There'll be a point when I'll say, please don't arm anymore if you don't mind. We'll be watching him. I'll get it.
MacArthur, of course, being a key general during the Second World War, MacArthur Boulevard is one of the longest boulevards in Washington, D.C., and this historic reference, let's call it that, by Donald Trump. But Nina, Germany certainly has a lot of homework to do. It's not just about money, it's about equipment. That's where the German government admits that they are in a long queue to actually place orders, but also about people. And Germany's only, quotation marks, allowed to have 370,000 soldiers. That's according to the treaty that sealed the reunification of Germany. This is all Cold War legacy. But where does Germany stand and what does it need?
The German army has roughly 181,000 soldiers. The goal that NATO set for Germany was a lot more, 20,000 more. Germany's not reaching that goal at the moment. So the big question arises, of course, what is going to be the requirement for Germany after this NATO summit? Boris Pistorius already said after the defense ministers' meeting that Alexandra also talked about, that Germany needs between 50 to 60,000 soldiers.
We've got that quote. Let's take a listen. Right?
So we are assuming, but this is only an estimate, that we need around 50,000 to 60,000
60,000 more soldiers in the standing armed forces than we do today. At the same time, the question will naturally arise, will the new military service be sufficient over the next few years? We assume this while capacities grow alongside. And I can only repeat, conscription is of no use to us right now. We don't have the capacities in the barracks or in training.
So capacity is a huge issue here. Not enough recruits, not enough barracks.
Yeah, they were all dismantled, right? I mean, we already talked about that period after the fall of the Berlin Wall when barracks were no longer in use much. I mean, people were still doing their training, but then in 2011, German government essentially decided, okay, where can we cut money? And they did that by also pausing conscription. It's not abolished. That is important to know. It's still in place, but it's paused at the moment. And they could reintroduce it, but that would mean that it would be applicable to all young men in Germany only, because that is what the law says. And any modern government cannot really do that anymore. They can't just have a military conscription for men only. So they would need to change the basic law, which is why it's so tricky. They can't just go and say, all right, we'll just stop the pause and reintroduce it again, because then only young men would be drafted. Which is why now the current governing coalition between the Conservatives and the Social Democrats have decided, all right, we need some sort of a voluntary system. And I was actually with Boris Pistorius, I was in Scandinavia, where he looked at best practice examples of how the Scandinavians are doing it. And he was quite impressed with their model. And that is a model that works with a voluntary mechanism where people, everybody who's 18, is essentially contacted by the Swedish government. And then they have to reply. And out of those people who apply, some people are invited for a test. And then the Swedish army can choose the people who they want to keep on. And Boris Pistorius is imagining some sort of a similar model for that. And we'll probably see that happening in the next couple of months, even, because he really doesn't have any time to spare. He really doesn't want to wait, but it would be voluntary. Only people who would then say, yeah, I can imagine becoming a soldier would then be drafted. But getting to those 60,000, that is never going to get him to those 60,000 soldiers that he needs. So at the same time, he's also trying to build barracks. They've got that special fund for defence-related spending as well. So infrastructure can be boosted, barracks can be built, and trainers can be equipped. I mean, you've also got to keep that balance, right, between soldiers who are actually acting soldiers on missions abroad. Germany has a certain number of obligations that they have to fulfill, where they have to send a certain number of soldiers, and then also have a number of soldiers who can train the young ones, right? So this is something that is going to be built up simultaneously over the next couple of years. But of course, some people, especially the Conservatives, but Boris Pistorius as well, are already saying it might not be enough. We might have to come to some sort of a mandatory system.
Yeah, and the army here still really has an image problem. And I just want to check in with some polling that was done. 45% of Germans are for the reinstatement of conscription because it was only paused, but also including women. So that would have to be, would require a change of Germany's constitution. 27% are for straight reintroduction, and no, 22%. It won't surprise anyone that the younger people are, the more they are against reinstating this, because they would be the one having to do the service. The older people are, the more they are in favor of that. But once you hit the baby boomers, they would have done military service in Germany anyway.
So it's basically our generation, right?
The people that's somewhere in between.
Younger, that is,
yeah,
somewhere
without
between
wanting
that
to reveal our age, but yes, absolutely. And
just to say that we're not baby boomers.
And this also led to a very curious moment between Friedrich Merz and Donald Trump. And it also is a telling moment because it shows how much the question of how to get people to want to join the military is weighing on the German Chancellor's mind. Let's just listen to that.
I think that one of the things you'd be most interested in is that 6 months ago, we were having a hard time getting anybody to join our military. I mean, they just couldn't do it. The numbers were record low. We couldn't get people to join the military. It wasn't me. This is before I got there, the past administration. But 6 months ago, a year ago, the numbers were record low. You couldn't get them to join. That included the police. And you couldn't get them to join. Now, We just hit the highest number in the history of our country, we think, but very close, but the highest in the history of our country, recruitment, joining the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, police forces all over the country.
What did you do for that? What was the reason?
Spirit. They love our country again. You're going to do the same thing. Spirit. We have great spirit is back.
So without going into the details on how accurate the record low and the record high was there in Donald Trump's statement, I just want to throw this to you, Alexandra. What is the take of European allies? What kind of spirit do they see in Germany when they look at the country that now potentially will be doing a huge chunk of the future defense spending?
Yes, I think for most of the countries that are members of the European Union and at the same time also members in the NATO alliance, many smaller countries, they have been waiting for Germany to show leadership again. I think that what we've been hearing here in Brussels, and of course they want them as the biggest economy in Europe to play an important role. And honestly, I know that there is some growing anti-German sentiment, for instance, in some parts of Poland, to name an example. But when you talk to officials and diplomats here in Brussels, it's really only positive reactions to what Germany is planning to do. But we also have to say that Germany has played and will be playing an important role when it comes, for instance, to being a transport and infrastructure hub, should there be any need to defend NATO's eastern flank. But of course, for those countries who are considering themselves frontline states, Poland, Latvia, Lithuania, Latvia and Lithuania have reintroduced conscriptions, for instance, there is, I think, a more urgent feeling that NATO really needs to ramp up their defenses, that they need to be ready for a potential attack by Russia. According to intelligence reports, Russia may be planning such an attack on NATO territory in the next 5 to 7 years. So I think this is kind of a different mindset still there, and then in Germany, and of course then in many countries, for instance in the southern part of Europe, when we talk about Italy or when we talk about Spain. And the defense spending, they are also expected to spend more in defense, and some of them are still struggling to reach the initial goal of spending 2% of GDP on defense. I had a chance to catch up with the Spanish defense minister last week, and she told me, well, we are spending 2%, and that is what we can do. We don't want to veto any new spending goal, but you know, we are confident and that we can meet the new military capability targets. That is something that the NATO defense ministers agreed on during their last meeting. But she said, we can do it with 2%, which is totally unrealistic, because what the defense ministers have agreed on is the largest rearmament program since the Cold War. So it's clear that there needs to be a ramp up in defense spending, but there are still countries that understand it better and have the mindset to really push forward with that. And there are countries who are trying to get a bit wiggle room and maybe more time to reach their new spending target.
Alex, I know from conversations here that there was a hope in Germany that setting up that brigade in Lithuania, which really is a historic first for modern day Germany, to have a whole brigade at all, having troops stationed permanently outside of Germany's own territory, there was a hope that other NATO partners would follow suit. Is there any detectable sign that Germany has been successful at setting an example here?
Not at the moment, as I understand, but of course the fact that we have now 8 battle groups in 8 NATO members, which was not the case in 2014, the fact that we can expect all allies to say, all right, we are on board with the 5% of GDP to be spent on defense. That is something that shows you that most of them understand what's at stake here. And of course, that most most of them also understand that there needs to be urgent action to also keep the Americans on board and within the alliance, because otherwise they may say, hey, we are not very happy with what you are doing. I think there have been a change of mood in the last few months. I guess you remember Pete Hegseth, the U.S. Secretary of Defense, and his first visit to NATO, and his bold remarks, him telling all the other allies, it's clear you need to do more. The U.S. is not paying anymore for your defense. It was nothing that was totally surprising, but the way how he put it, how his bold remarks was kind of shocking at that time. Since then, we've heard senior U.S. figures stressing that the U.S. is committed to the NATO alliance, stressing that the U.S. is committed to Article 5, saying that, yes, they want to stay within the alliance. So the mood is now a bit different. We are not talking anymore about the U.S. thinking about pulling out of the NATO alliance. We are talking more about what the Europeans can really do to convince U.S. President Donald Trump to be happy with the upcoming NATO summit and with what Europeans are doing in terms of paying for their own defense.
Yes, indeed. This was remarkable. Also, during the meeting between German Chancellor Friedrich Merz and Donald Trump, there was no mention of those medium-range missiles that the Biden administration had committed to stationing in Germany.
Next year on.
Yes. So that was seen as a success. Also, no mention. Trump was asked directly whether he would pull troops out of Europe, out of Germany. He said, well, no, doesn't really look like it. So everybody's kind of hoping nobody mentions it anymore.
If I may just jump in, sure. Michaela, I think that's a common sense that after the NATO summit, and the U.S. are now in the process of reviewing their force posture in Europe. The expectation is that after the NATO summit in The Hague end of June, we will have some new announcements. We don't know how big they are going to be, how much soldiers they are willing to pull out of Europe. But at NATO HQ, I think there is a common understanding that there will be changes. They're just hoping they are not going to be big changes, but that the U.S. is going to reduce the number of their troops in Europe. I think that is something that is for sure coming in the next weeks or months.
Alexandra, can I just ask you, are we going to see another regular NATO summit then fairly soon, potentially, because the 5% that they are going to agree on now works under the assumption that everything sort of stays the way it is, right? And if the US, as is expected, is going to make some sort of an announcement or just a decision where people have to sort of guess what the consequences might be for them, then that will change all the parameters. So those 5% might then not be enough to essentially make up for the gap that the US is potentially leaving.
Well, that's what I would assume as well. But actually, we talk about that during this off-the-record briefing at NATO today. And the answer there was that if the U.S., as expected, decides to reduce its troops in Europe, that would be part of the operational planning. That is something that is happening now. The numbers of troops that the Supreme Allied Commander of NATO has at his disposal. The defense plans, the long-term defense plans, and the 5% is something that is a long-term planning. It means that is going to happen in 7 or 10 years. As I said, they are still negotiating the time frame. So what we were told today is that the defense plans that are now going to be implemented, they are based on the assumption already that the U.S. is not going to play the big role that they used to play in Europe in the future.
And of course, the big question is how much of this long-term planning and these announcements into the long-term will be fulfilled, and whether there might be some off-the-cuff remark by the U.S. president, which suddenly means a change in U.S. policy. So these are the uncertainties. And in the center of this is, of course, this expectation on Germany to deliver more defense. I just want to look at the polling again. About half of Germans find 5% adequate. 7% say it should be more. And 35% say it goes too far. here in Germany. And Germany wouldn't be Germany, and the Social Democrats, who are the junior coalition partner, wouldn't be the Social Democrats if they didn't have very different views within their own party. Boris Pistorius is the Social Democrat defense minister who survived into this administration. And maybe I'll let you introduce the manifesto that's just making quite a wave here in the internal German debate, although it is very unlikely to have any kind of impact on the German course, both on defense and foreign policy.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked a lot in this episode, but also in previous episodes, about the fact that Germany has understood that wake-up call, that now is the time to boost defense spending. And yes, that is true for a certain chunk of the population. This is true for the current government, for the conservative and Social Democrat coalition. But yes, you do have to keep in mind that the Social Democrats who are represented in the government only represent half that party. The other half is very much a group of people who have a very proud history of belonging to the peace movement during the Cold War. And that is a period where the SPD stood very firm for a sort of a rapprochement with Russia, to sort of not try and not escalate tensions, you know, the sort of the change through trade, etc. That was something that they're very, very proud of. And a lot of those politicians still feel that they're not being heard enough, that they feel that it is too confrontational, the tone that is happening towards Russia, that Russia is only being seen as an aggressor, and that not enough diplomatic efforts have been made to try and bring Vladimir Putin to the table. And this is, the SPD is now in a crisis mode of sorts because they're heading towards their big party convention. Let's just put it into context, right?
Although I don't remember a time when the Social Democrats weren't in crisis. But this time it's over the whole question of rearmament.
That is also true. It's Germany's oldest party. They have a very long history of also fighting fascism. We're the only ones who voted against, voted against Hitler rising to power. 150, 160 years old, have been in lots and lots of governments, in the majority of governments since the end of the Second World War, in fact. But they now had their historically worst result in this year's federal election. They only came third after the far-right AfD party even. So 16.4% is not something that they're very proud of, which is why now lots of people in the party are challenging the current leadership under Finance Minister Lars Klingbeil, who stands for that course that also Boris Pistorius represents, you know, the boosting the realization, okay, we made a wrong assessment. Russia, the current Russia, is not a partner that you can implement democratic ideas into if you only talk to them long enough. That is an assessment that most sort of realpolitik supporters have now come to terms with. But it is still not something that group of people willing to subscribe to. They say not enough diplomatic efforts have been made. They also say spending almost half of Germany's annual budget on defense and defense-related issues is a catastrophe, that this should go into other areas where there's underfunding. And of course, they also question the idea of having military conscription. Now, there is a lot of pushback from other SPD members, you also have to say.
And let's just take a look at that manifesto. And before we take a look, I just want to encourage all of you, if you are interested in any particular aspect of what we're just debating here in Germany, the Social Democrats, their take on Russia, do drop us a line just below. Do let us know what you would like to get fully briefed on in Germany's relation to the outside world, but also on defense. We've already done a couple of Berlin briefings. We're going to drop them also in the notes below if you want to take a listen to that. And of course, we had that big special on the meeting of German Chancellor Friedrich Merz and Donald Trump. That's the last episode ahead of this one.
Where, by the way, can I just say, we got a lot of really helpful comments there, because it does show us that people are watching that debate that is happening in Germany, right? Internationally, it is vital debate. Where is Germany going to go? How much are they going to invest in defense? We also talked about that dilemma. Do our allies really want our country with our past to become a strong military power again? And this is something, I'll just pick one of the comments from P.J.H. Gerlach, who wrote us, as a Dutchman, I'm not uncomfortable with the strong German army. I'm aware of the cooperation between the Dutch and German military, and I trust our neighbours more than those Americans in Washington. This is the gist of a lot of comments that we've been getting. The uncertainty. Alexandra said Donald Trump has essentially said, no, I'll sign up to Article 5. No, I'm not questioning anything. But the uncertainty, is he going to change his mind or not, is really keeping people busy.
So, and if there's anything you feel we're not talking enough about, let us know about it. We will put together a Berlin briefing on if we have a couple of comments on any particular aspect of this.
Hi, I'm Kate Laycock, host of DW's weekly European current affairs programme, Inside Europe. Our correspondents were there when the Berlin Wall fell, when the Balkans Wars broke out, and when Britain voted to leave the European Union. Now the continent is changing again, and we're rising to the challenge, bringing you a combination of expert analysis and on-the-ground reporting. Join us every Thursday.
So here's the manifesto, which was published and caused quite a stir here in Germany by the former chief whip of the German Social Democrats, amongst others. Military alarmist rhetoric and massive rearmament programs do not create more security for Germany and Europe, but rather lead to destabilization and to a heightened perception of mutual threats between NATO and Russia. And I also want to add that this was welcomed by the Kremlin, this manifesto.
Surprise, surprise.
There you go. So is this really a manifesto or is this a footnote in German politics?
Yeah. Well, like I say, this group of people is very confident and they have been having that feeling that they have not been heard enough, which is also funny because the chief whip did...
The
former chief whip during the last term of the last government, of Olaf Scholz's government, Rolf Mützenich was the guy who had to organise all the majorities in Parliament. And he did that. He was always vocal in his criticism. He always stressed, we're not debating this enough. This is just going too far. And we risk provoking Russia by boosting our own defence. So he always made his voice heard. But in the end, he did what he had to do. He had to organise those majorities to push through that new politics. But that is just a side note. I think lots of things are now coming up. The G7 summit in Canada, NATO summit, but most importantly for the SPD, their party convention. So if these people are not being heard now, then they will not be heard. Of course, it is going to keep Lars Klingbeil busy. Lars Klingbeil...
Vice Chancellor and Finance Minister,
but he's also the head of the party. So, he just has to try and keep his party together at a time when really he should be focusing his attention on other potentially more pressing topics.
And German Defence Minister Boris Pistorius, it's an open secret that he was battling his party on that very issue of more defence spending ever since he came into office in the last administration here in Germany. As we are recording this, he is in Kiev. And take a listen, he had a message both for Ukraine, but also to his own party as he arrived there.
As sad as it is no surprise that Putin is continuing with undiminished severity at a time when others are all talking about when peace or ceasefire negotiations will be reached. I hear it was quieter last night. But the nights before that were extraordinarily violent and threatening with a large number of cruise missiles and drone attacks. This sends a clear signal from Moscow. There is no interest in a peaceful solution at the moment. Instead, Ukraine keeps being attacked with undiminished ferocity and increasingly in civilian areas. And that must worry us on the one hand, but also strengthen our unity in supporting Ukraine.
So unity in supporting Ukraine, he wants to see that from his own party. Alexandra, does everybody in Brussels at NATO have complete faith that Friedrich Merz has his ducks lined up within his own government coalition?
Well, I think that, of course, all of that is fueling some skepticism when it comes to Germany's stance on Russia. I think that Friedrich Merz has shown that he has a very pro-Ukrainian position there. And that is also something that we saw under his predecessor. But of course, there are some countries in eastern part of Europe, Latvia, Lithuania, who would like to be convinced that Germany stands there, it's not going to change. However, I just wanted to stress that it's not only a potential problem in Germany, that there are some members of Social Democrats or even big chunks of the German population maybe who are opposing a bigger defense spending goals. We can see it in other corners of the European Union, just or even outside the European Union. Just think about the protests that we saw a few days ago in the UK, with people saying, we don't want you to cut social benefits just to spend more money on defense, on new weapons, on new equipment. So the further away you are from a border with Russia or a border with Ukraine, the more people are, I think, to some extent skeptical when it comes to the government's decision to increase defense spending. Because, of course, they say, well, we need to spend more on education. We want to spend more on social benefits. And this is also a topic at NATO that the leaders and their parties, that they need to convince their population, their societies, that this is what has to be done to make sure that we can deter Russia and that we can keep NATO countries safe.
Yeah, Nina, I just want to dive into that point there, because, of course, this was a very contentious issue during elections where the far-right AfD party fared very well, particularly last year in regional elections in Saxony-Anhalt, in Thuringia as well. And there, the whole question of the future role of Russia really resonates with large parts of the population. Can you just put that into perspective with this manifesto? Because some are accusing parts of the Social Democrats to basically blow the trumpet for a far-right AfD position.
Not just far-right AfD, but also far-left Sarah Wagenknecht. And we've done special episodes on this podcast about those two parties. And yes, this is something where we've seen a lot of people also within the SPD saying we need to have some of those positions more prominently featured in the current, you know, doing and in our politics. We need to not forget the underfunding of education, the lack of investment in infrastructure, etc. And of course, those are tangible problems here in Germany. You know, all those cliches that our trains always run on time, etc., they're just not true anymore because of underfunding. And this is affecting people's everyday life. And this is creating a mood where populist positions are very, very attractive to a very big number of people. So it is a huge challenge for Friedrich Merz, because ultimately what Alexandra just said, the people who support a boost in defense spending are saying it is necessary to deter Russia, to stop them from even thinking about attacking another NATO ally, be it Estonia, whatever. And there is no glory in prevention. So you don't see a positive result. You only see more tanks, you see more people in uniforms, but you don't see the benefits, right? This is something where it is an easy target for those populist parties that say, why are you spending that much on tanks when really you should be building schools and not barracks? So it is a tricky line that Friedrich Merz will have to walk.
And it is interesting and almost intriguing that despite that phone call that Donald Trump had just before Friedrich Merz arrived in the Oval Office.
You mean with Vladimir Putin?
Yeah, with Vladimir Putin, that even Donald Trump seems to have a feeling that he might be running out of patience, and that some are still arguing that the Russian president, Putin, wants peace talks or wants peace. Now we're talking about...
But, I mean, clear a sign, right? Volodymyr Zelensky from Ukraine goes to Istanbul, says, I'm ready to negotiate. If Vladimir Putin comes, we can sit down at a table. Who doesn't turn up? Vladimir Putin.
So we'll be doing a lot more on that in the near future. I just want to close with asking you, Alexandra, but also you, Nina, to tell me, how ready do you believe Germany is to take a leading role in European defense, and why, in one sentence? Nina, you start.
I think Germany will be ready once the Americans come out with their statement after the NATO summit.
Alex, did she just steal your line or do you have a different take?
From my perspective, from here from Brussels, it really looks like Germany is ready to take on a leadership role in Brussels. And everyone here is happy about that.
Okay, well, thanks to you both. And that's our full briefing on how ready Germany is to become Europe's largest conventional military force, as vowed by German Chancellor Friedrich Merz. If you want more details, check out the links below. And you can also take a deep dive into the previous defense episodes of Berlin Briefing. That's the big special also on that meeting between Friedrich Merz and Donald Trump. That was the previous episode. You can also stay up to date with our Berlin Briefing newsletter. So thanks for investing your time with us this time around, and get fully briefed up next week again.